Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity this week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis. Back to the usual format today. And, Ian, we start with the good martini, and we start with millennials. They've been here once before on this very same subject, because it was a few weeks ago, well before the election, where we saw that millennials who were definitely planning to vote in the 2016 election were way down compared to 2008, with only 47% saying they were definitely going to vote. That's bad enough for Hillary Clinton. Then came how they actually voted. According to the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, it has the clever acronym CIRCLE, the preeminent youth research organization at Tufts University released an analysis of 2016 exit poll data in historical context. As in the poll that we conducted before the election, we continue to see big differences among young people depending on their race and ethnicity. The pre-election poll of millennials, which is ages 18 to 34, had Clinton 49%, Trump 28%, a 21-point difference for the Democratic candidate. The national exit poll suggests that the actual split in the election was 55% for Clinton to 37% for Trump, which is more for Clinton, but even more for Trump. That's an 18-point gap among youth aged 18 to 29. So when you compare that to what Obama was able to do, especially in 08, but even in 2012, which was a much tighter popular vote race against Mitt Romney, the millennials not doing what they have done in the past. So interestingly, Ian, the people out crying in the streets are largely responsible for Hillary Clinton losing this thing.
I think it was the NYPD said that half of the people they've arrested didn't vote, which is just kind of perfect. I'm going to live to regret this, but I'm going to be momentarily bullish on millennial voting patterns. I do think it's right what conservatives said, that, you know, Donald Trump threatened to lose millennial voters for a generation, that for people for whom this was their first election, Donald Trump was going to turn them off of conservative candidates forever and ever. Except that he won, which is just shakes up that whole calculus. Take that in concert with the fact that actually Obama didn't blow the millennial vote out of the water, as was widely reported. And millennials liked George W. Bush. They liked Reagan. They liked George H.W. Bush. The millennials at the appropriate time. I'm just not as gloomy about 18 to 30 year olds, at whatever point, as some of my colleagues. I think that there's a lot of growing up that happens, and I just think there's also a lot of general disengagement. So the idea that actually youth voters this cycle might have overperformed for Trump compared to expectations seems to me not particularly surprising, and I think is another reminder just to sort of cool down when it comes to doing Chicken Little routines about this cohort or that cohort.
Ian, let's move on to the bad martini now. And David French and I talked about this a little bit last week, but the movement seems to have not died down, which means the stupidity seems not to have died down. We were talking about the Huffington Post and the New Republic talking about how, because Hillary won the popular vote, but Trump won the electoral vote, naturally, we've got to get rid of the Electoral College, because now it's happened twice in 16 years. It's a crisis. It's an absolute crisis. And that's essentially the fundamental underpinnings of a article in Politico from Timothy Noah, who says, because this had not happened since the 19th century, now that it's happened twice in the last 16 years, we absolutely and obviously have to get rid of the Electoral College. Then you got Roger Simon today. Talk about smug reporting. Listen to this. How many people who didn't vote for Hillary because they didn't want Obama 3.0 would disembowel themselves for a chance to vote for her today? A lot of people, I'm guessing. They would have to live in the right states, of course. Hillary already is leading Trump in the popular vote by more than 750,000 voters, and now it's about a million. But she needed voters who were living in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. This is our loony electoral college system, an 18th century scheme for choosing a president devised by men in powdered wigs and silk stockings. The Founding Fathers argued over it a lot, but had so little pride in the solution that the phrase Electoral College appears nowhere. in the Constitution. So for the second time in 16 years, our popular vote winner did not become president. Not to be outdone, a man who was creamed in both the Electoral College and the popular vote says it's time to get rid of the Electoral College. Michael Dukakis, because everyone's been waiting for him to weigh in on this. It's been a while, Ian. It's been about 28 years, but I'm going to try to do my best Michael Dukakis here. Ready?
Okay.
Hillary won this election, and when the votes are all counted by what will likely be more than a million votes, so how come she isn't going to the White House in January? That is the raw political
it's pretty good.
Charisma
pretty good.
Of Michael Dukakis. Eric Holder went on Bill Maher's show last week and said he's absolutely going to make that a number one priority. Barbara Boxer, who's not even going to be in the Senate in a few weeks, is introducing legislation to abolish the Electoral College, which, by the way, would require a constitutional amendment. And given where the state legislatures and the balance of power in Congress stand right now, guessing that's not going to go very far. Basically, my question for you, Ian, is do these Democrats not really know that we're not a democracy, or are they just trying to convince other people that might not be as smart that we are a democracy?
No, I think it's exactly the former. The democratic ethos has been fetishized. The simple fact was that the founders were deeply skeptical of majoritarian democracy. Barbara Boxer, in proposing the legislation, said that it's undemocratic. Yeah, that's the point. You know, the Electoral College prevents basically California and New York and Texas from picking the president, which is the possibility that you would have in if you went strictly to a national popular vote. A national popular vote to decide the presidency also raises the stakes for electoral fraud to just astronomical levels, because then every vote you can steal anywhere matters. Whereas, you know, you can steal as many votes as you want in Detroit, but it only matters for Michigan, right? There's a certain it limits the perverse impact that fraud might have. Also, the Electoral College is meant to balance interest groups, and this is the other issue that's at stake here, and which was particularly prominent in this election. If you went by the popular vote, what you have is a vast overrepresentation. Urban or metropolitan areas. And so you basically have the interests of urban residents, of metropolitan residents, dominating over interests of those in, you know, suburban or exurban or rural America. And part of the reality of the Electoral College is it helps to balance that. And, you know, to respond to something like Timothy Noah's point that this didn't used to happen, but it does now. Well, yeah, it's because people have so dramatically urbanized, right? So the population centers have compressed. In 1820, the population density was considerably lower in urban areas than it is now. So the Electoral College was more likely to match the popular vote. But this is these people don't seem to understand that this is exactly the type of situation that the Electoral College is meant to handle, when basically you have one type of interest group or you know, one faction dominating over the other in terms of sheer numbers. The Electoral College helps to balance that out. And also, I just really, really, really don't want California to be picking the president.
So you're saying it's a feature, not a bug.
Exactly. Yeah.
Quick exit question on this one. Prior to November 9th, possibly even mm-hmm. November 8th, mm-hmm. in this entire cycle, perhaps even since 2002, maybe 2004, have you heard anyone complaining about the Electoral College?
Yeah, I thought that was what you were about to ask. And, you know, people were strangely quiet about it beforehand. And also, for whatever reason, I have this vague impression that if the situation were reversed and Trump had won the popular vote and Hillary had won the Electoral College, our friends on the left would be praising the wisdom of our virtuous founders who were wise enough to install a system that would keep a tyrant like Trump out of the White House. I just have that suspicion.
That's a noble way of putting it. I'm not sure they'd go so far and actually say nice things in public about the founders, since they were white and some of them owned slaves. But I think they would at least say, those are the rules and we won, so go stuff it. I'm pretty sure that would be the message.
This is the difference between us, Greg. You're a realist. I'm an idealist. So.
That's why we balance well. All right. There's a lot of people, obviously, still very upset. We've talked about the college kids. We've talked about the people who want to get rid of the Electoral College, many of whom are in the media because they're just as upset as the people burning stuff. They just haven't gotten to the point of burning stuff yet. And now they're finding all sorts of problems with Trump for fairly mundane things. I would say, Ian, I don't know if you agree with this, but first of all, I would say I think they're nitpicking the transition more than they probably would a different president-elect. Clearly, there's been upheaval. There's been a new transition chairman in Mike Pence kicking out Chris Christie. And if reports are accurate, some of the folks that Christie had lined up on the transition. So there's a little more turmoil. But the way that it's being characterized in the press, I would say, is being magnified as opposed to if it had been a different, more mainstream candidate. But now we've got this as our official crazy martini, courtesy of NBC News. This is the headline, first of all. As Trump leaves press behind for steak dinner, incoming admin already showing lack of transparency. In a highly unusual move, President-elect Donald Trump on Tuesday night left his Manhattan residence without notifying the reporters covering him or giving any indication of where he was going. The maneuver seemed to deliberately limit access to the media. The only way the press eventually ascertained his whereabouts was after a Bloomberg reporter, who happened to be dining at the 21 Club, tweeted a photo of Trump and some of his transition team in the Midtown Steakhouse. Trump spokesman Hope Hicks later told NBC News he's having dinner with his family. Wife Melania, daughter Ivanka, her husband Jared Kushner, sons Donald Jr. and Eric were all at the restaurant. So we get that there is generally a protocol for the media to have a pretty good idea of where the president is and when he's done moving around for the evening and so forth. But we know that the president has ducked out in the past. Bush went to Iraq secretly to spend Thanksgiving. We obviously know Clinton snuck out of the White House more than once. So would this even be an issue if it wasn't Donald Trump?
No, of course not. This is the dumbest thing. I want to quote here from Rachel Maddow, who called this story really, really important on her show last night. I'm sure she said it with more emphasis. It is a matter of national security that the press know exactly when and where Donald Trump is eating his steak dinners. I mean, this is just absolute nuts. I'll steal from Jazz Shaw over at Hot Air. I mean, the only reason that this is the way it is because that's the way the press has made it. You know, the press has basically over the years, this sort of tradition has consolidated in which the press generally has an idea of where the president is. But it has nothing to do with national security. It has everything to do with the press likes to know where the president is because it's their job to report on things. Also, if Trump hadn't gone to the steakhouse to have dinner, they wouldn't have known if he would. You know, he could have gone back to Trump Tower and then what? You know, in fact, if you could say that part of what reporters want out of the Trump transition is to show him in public and then have, you know, all these protesters come and throw tomatoes, and that makes for great footage. Obviously, Donald Trump has not been a friend to the media, nor have many of his supporters, and so there's a natural antagonism here. But this has nothing to do with anything other than, you know, the media's prurient interest in having a 24/7 eye on the president. And lastly, it might be worth just mentioning he's not president yet. I know that may be a distinction without a difference, but he hasn't been inaugurated. You know, let's if we who were the first people to be against Trump can say let's give him a chance, you know, maybe they can let him have a dinner with his family.
Three very quick things here before we exit. The rest of this article also is just a big whining fest from NBC about Trump and the access to the media. A week after the election, Trump hasn't yet held a press conference, the longest any recent president has waited to speak to the press. That continues a weeks-long drought that has been going on since midsummer when Trump last answered questions from the press. Trump has also refused to travel with the press corps since the election, a continuation of his campaign practice of flying in a separate plane from the media that covered him. Two quick things. Ian, I'm guessing the Secret Service knew where he was, and as long as they knew, I'm pretty much okay with that. And secondly, one of the daggers thrown out there today is the media still has no idea where Obama was when Benghazi was happening. But they're really upset that Trump was eating steak and they weren't told.
Oh, that's good. That's quite good. I love this argument that, like, this was, you know, people were having this debate on Twitter. Like, what if he were to collapse? Like, And what, you somehow think that we're not going to find out? I mean, what exactly is the argument here? No, I just, this is just the media creates tempests in teapots because that's what they like.
Basically, these are people who wish they could go burn stuff, but can't. And so this is their equivalent of it. Is that pretty much what we're seeing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Good to see the maturity is flowing all over the place amongst those who did not appreciate the election results on last Tuesday night. Ian, another crazy day, and we'll do it again tomorrow. See you then.
Indeed. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.